Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, out there on the edge of the prairie. It's been warm there. It's been up in the 20s, and so we don't know when the other shoe is going to drop, but we are sure that it will eventually, sooner rather than later. And we are stocking up for it by eating those giant caramel rolls that Dorothy bakes at the Chatterbox Cafe. These are immense rolls. These are about the size of a softball. They have about twice the minimum daily adult requirement of caramel in them. And, boy, you could be snowbound a long time with one of those caramel rolls. You'd feel guilty about eating one of them if the weather were warm, but you know, when it's winter, you got to keep some reserve just in case. You never know. They serve these caramel rolls at the Valentine's Day couples dinner and dance at Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility Church. And it was a great success, mainly on account of sugar. These people do need to get buzzed a little bit, you know. Yeah, it was a great success. Myrtle Krebsbach was one of the hostesses for the Valentine's Day supper and dance. Old lady, jet black wig. We assume it's a wig. We're not sure. Nobody wants to get close enough to find out. Wearing that purple pants suit that she seems to wear every time she comes to town. You're not sure when she does the laundry, if or when. She was out there at the dinner, and she was hugging. She always gets in this hugging mood during Lent. People feel odd because a lot of people are still angry at her for terrible things that she said back in her pre-hugging mode. She's a woman who trails a stream of profanity behind her, embarrasses her grandchildren, her husband, everybody. But now in Lent, she's gone up and hugging people, some of whom are trying to escape around the other side of the building. Woman come flying at you like some great black bird come out of the dark, like a fruit bat going after you. She came after Senator Kay Torvaldsen, who was there at the Valentine's couple dinner, even though he's not Catholic and even though he's not married. He's just there for a change of scenery, I guess. He's 91 years old, the oldest man in town, still flirting with waitresses to the embarrassment of his family. They all have become resigned to the idea that he'll probably outlive them. Old man stooped about 6 inches shorter than he was in his youth, and great cloud, a great nimbus of white hair around him, and smelling bad. You come up close to him, he smells like he died on Thursday. Smells like he died and like he's going to heaven a little piece at a time. Smells of nicotine and caffeine and fermented fruit, all the preservatives. Myrtle hugged him. She said, Mr. Torvaldsen, you need to find a good woman. He said, I don't care about good anymore. He said, maybe I'll need to go on the internet. Which made Darlene Blanche, she was just standing around the corner to hear him say that, because she's been meeting men on the internet, and she's met one now who says he's 60. But what if he's as old as this old coot here, who smells so bad and has eyebrows the size of hamsters? Darlene is the waitress at the Chatterbox Cafe. She's been looking for a man for a long time, hadn't found any that seemed to be a good long-term prospect. Of course, it depends on what you mean by long-term. But then, too, she makes the mistake of telling people about the men she's met and she's dating, and gossip in this town is just vicious. You go dating a man who's got one earring, and by the time the gossip gets back to you, he's got tattoos all over his body. He works in the carnival. He's a sword swallower. He's a contortionist. She said to Dorothy the other day in the chatterbox, she said, I just want to fall in love and find somebody. Dorothy said, why don't you just burn down your house? It'd cause less damage and be just as exciting. These are skeptical people about romance because this is not the land of the magnolias that we're talking about. These are God's frozen people up there in the north. Pastor Enquist was down in Nashville for a few days week before last, and came back, and there were rumors that he had accepted a job down here. Maybe he was switching over to become a Methodist or a Baptist. But it wasn't true. People just assume anybody would rather live in Tennessee. I suppose they have their reasons for that. But he came down to visit friends, old friends from seminary, who had gotten kicked out of seminary, Lutheran seminary, for firing a Bible out of a cannon. They were celebrating, of course. It was just before graduation. And they got a cannon, a big stovepipe, and they used those soft leather-bound Bibles, the kind that roll up real good. And you tie them with twine, and they make a sort of a cartridge. They had four of them, and they put them in this tube, and they shot them, and one of them went through the dean's upstairs bedroom window. So they were kicked out of the Lutheran church, because we can't have that sort of thing, and they had to become Pentecostals. And they came down here to Tennessee. They were with the Joy, Joy, Joy Church, which is a very successful, charismatic Pentecostal church. In the Lutheran church, we believe in charisma, but not in our own case. They came down to Tennessee, and they preached for a while, and then they got tired of that, and they started a theme park, an amusement park called Kingdom Land. And they had different rides. They had the Den of Lions ride. Of course, they had Noah's Ark, and they had other things. They had a ride called Resurrection, which they had to cease because people complained about it. There was fog involved and a bungee cord. And but see, the Pentecostal church is the fastest growing church, one of them in America, just growing by leaps and bounds. And these immense Pentecostal churches have gotten going here in the South, and this is their problem. That's what they wanted to talk to Pastor Enquist about, the problems of growth. The Pentecostals are a church that believes in people expressing their feelings and letting things out and whooping and yelling and running up and down the aisles and barking if that's what the Spirit tells you to do. And many of these people just kind of assume that's probably what the Spirit would want. So they go off and they do it. And they believe in healing and the laying on of hands and curing people. They're an outspoken church. But you see, they're growing by leaps and bounds. And they're growing because of all these northerners who have come south and who are looking for a new church home. See, these are northerners who've left the north and come south, not because of job opportunities, as they might tell you, or because of the weather, but because they didn't get along with people back home. These are a rigid and a judgmental and a cold people. You'd rather hug a tree than hug any one of them. But they've come down and joined Pentecostal churches, which are becoming immense, growing and growing and growing. But the preachers have to learn to tone things down and what not wear those big wide yellow ties and the plaid pants that they enjoy wearing in charismatic Christianity. And they have to learn not to put their hands on a northern person. We don't go for that. We don't like to be touched. And they don't like it when preachers come down into the auditorium, as they do in the old-style Pentecostal church. They come right down, look right at you. Come right down, put their arm around you. Come right down, yell right in your ear. Tell you, if you don't throw yourself on the altar of mercy right now, and I mean right now, you don't have any future. You're going to burn to a crisp, and that's just the truth. But see, you grow by taking in all these northerners, and you can't do that anymore. These are people who start to feel uncomfortable if you come any closer than 44 inches. So they're talking to Pastor Enquist about starting a kind of halfway house for Pentecostal preachers. Send them up north to retrain them. Have a halfway house called Costanon. Where they could learn to modify themselves and be tastefully charismatic and to heal people at a distance as we northerners prefer to be healed, preferably through pharmaceuticals. And get them out of those habits of standing up and whooping and yelling and putting your hands up above your head, and behave rather as northern people would, to sit very quietly in your place with your hands in your lap and wait for it to be over and then go downstairs and have coffee. February would be a good time to retrain those Pentecostals. Send them up to us. We'll change them. Winter is a time that changes a person. It's good for a person. It terrified me when I was a boy, because I did have to walk 5 miles to school through the drifts, and I wore those big heavy overshoes with the 5 clasps on them. And the road went down beside a ravine, a dark ravine, out of sight of any house. And there were wild dogs roaming out there. Escaped pets. Renegade pets who had a grudge. Looking to even it up by settling a score with a small child. A small child with big, heavy boots. And after I got through that terrifying veil of death and came up onto the plains, and I walked 2 more miles through the drifts and through the snow, sometimes unable to see my nose in front of my face, though why you would be looking at your nose, I don't know, but you'd come up to school, and then you had to walk past the water pump, which stood out in the playground. We didn't use it anymore. It's an old iron water pump. Stood there on a wooden platform. You had to walk past it to get to the front door of the school. Now, you wouldn't think that would be a problem, but I'd been warned so many times against putting my tongue on the handle of an iron water pump. Had been warned against it so many times and so fervently by my mother, that when I saw that pump, it started to speak to me. And it said, "Come on over here. Come on over here. You know you want to." Now, I knew that if I put my tongue on that pump handle, that it would freeze to it, and I wouldn't be able to get it off. And the janitor would have to come with a blowtorch or with a pitcher of boiling water and have to warm up that handle, but it still wouldn't warm up enough. And they'd have to call the fire department, and my teacher would come out weeping, and they would have to grab me by the shoulders, and they'd say, "Just relax," as if a person could, knowing that in just one moment your tongue was going to be torn out of your mouth and you would never ever be able to get a job when you were older in anything that required clear speech. You'd have to shovel walks, you'd have to sort mail in the post office or something. I knew that this would happen if I put my tongue to it, and yet I'd been warned against it so many times. I used to walk over to it, just stand there, put my hand on the handle. It's very cold. So cold. I used to put my face down to it. Put my tongue out just a little bit. I've seen people in Nashville and other places, I've seen people late at night go off and put their tongues on pump handles or the equivalent, doing things that they've been told not to do, and they know what the outcome of it will be, but they go and they do it anyway. I almost did it as a child, and then I did not do it because I loved school And I love the smell of chalk dust, and I love the smell of books and of pencil shavings and construction paper and white paste, and the love of that room and those smells drew me away from that pump handle. And that is how I am able to be here with you today and talking fairly clearly and making some sense often enough. It's a confusing life, and we get too old before we can ever figure it out, and there are disappointing days, and today's one of them. Boy, you just think back on all the things you could have done differently if you'd just been paying attention. But there's one thing. I did not put my tongue on a pump handle today. Any day that you do not put your tongue on a pump handle is a pretty good day. It could be worse. And then you have a little payoff, and you have a caramel roll as a reward for not putting your tongue on the handle. Happiness lies in small things, and a caramel roll is no small thing. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.